What are you doing?
The recording.
Yeah. Huh? It's going to stream live. That's cool. I'm an alcoholic. My name's John.
John.
Sobriety date is 1-7-10, and I appreciate what I just heard. You know, I think about the bottoms, and every bottom has a trap door, you know, and God knows I had to hit them. I want to read something out of the 12 and 12, and granted, this was written, and it's because this is the YPG, the Young People's Group, right? All right. So we begin to recognize that alcoholics, this trend grew. They were joined by young people who were scarcely more than potential alcoholics. They were spared the last 10 or 15 years of literal hell the rest of us had to go through. Now, I before I get into the story part of it, I'm employed at a high-end treatment center, and this book, that statement is a little outdated now because the young people today are, you guys are overachievers, man. You wrecked your lives quick. You know what I mean? What took me to age 40, you guys can do by age 17, you know what I mean? And then and hit the rooms, and it's just God bless, you know. To, you know, if I, to have this program from that age on, you guys are truly the chosen ones. You have such an unfair advantage over the rest of the people if you live in the 12 steps. That's just my belief. Anyway, how it was. Born and raised Boston, Massachusetts. Father was an alcoholic, but I didn't really realize he was an alcoholic until I came into AA, and then I got to kind of look at his history a little bit and understand why we were moving to Florida from Boston and things like that, you know, the job changes and stuff like that. Drunkalog is pretty generic, couple of wrecked cars, party and two abortions, you know, during just drunken one-night stands, you know what I mean? And it's just, this is all just part of my four-step that I, you know, I had to take responsibility for and clear it up if I could, or leave it alone if I could. A lot of missed opportunities. I was my family was in pretty good shape, even with my father's alcoholism, and there were some jobs lined up for me when I got out of University of Florida. Go Gators tomorrow night, 9:49. And I chose to get drunk before the interviews. You know, and it's amazing how many opportunities I wasted because I couldn't stay sober for 5 hours before an interview or something like that. I mean, it's crazy. And back to college, I have enough college credit for 3 bachelors and I don't know, probably a couple of associates, and I don't have a degree, you know, and I contacted University of Florida like 5 years ago, and they sent me, I have a liberal arts degree from the University of Florida, you know what I mean, which means you went to school for a long time and you drank your ass off, and you took advantage of your parents and everything else. I married an alcoholic, and when I went into AA, and I'll start to work into what happened. I lived on Sanibel Island. I was the aquatics director for the city of Sanibel, had a retail store on the side, and was teaching fifth grade science for the elementary school, which started out as an on-call thing, but became a full-time thing when the teacher went to have a baby and never came back. I played tennis every Sunday with these 3 guys. And this went on for probably, you know, 5 years, and we would play in the benefit tournaments that they would have on the island and stuff like that. And I never caught on to the fact that at the award ceremonies and stuff like that, they would never hit the keg. I was the only one that was just like getting plastered. So they were watching me just spin downhill. City of Sanibel started to notice, and they called me in during a work shift and breathalyzed me, and I blew numbers. And this is at year 11 of my employment with them. So EAP at that time sent me down to a high-end rehab like the one I work in now down in Miami. It was a Hazleton unit. which was not AA. It's an offshoot of AA. It was good stuff. But, you know, they gave me Valium because I have seizures when I come off alcohol. And we played golf on Fridays, and it was a wonderful paid vacation. You know what I mean? I stayed sober for 2 months when I got back, and that was it because I just wasn't ready. So these guys that I was playing tennis with decided that, you know, I was puking in between sets and then going back, come on, let's go. You know what I mean? I was just reckless. And they said, you want to go out to breakfast? And I felt like shit, but I said, okay. And they took me to a meeting out on Captiva Island. And it was it was the turning point of my life. And granted, I'm a very slow turner because that was in 2001. And I got into AA. I can't say I got into AA. I went to AA. You know, they told me about getting a sponsor. They told me about all this stuff. I was like, when am I going to the airport to give flowers out? You know what I mean? I was still stuck on the fact that it's a cult. And I just couldn't. I was raised, my father's side was Jewish. My mother's side was Catholic. So I was all screwed up from the whole religious spiritual side. Christmas, they'd get drunk and they'd fight about who Jesus was. You know what I mean? You know, my mother's side is just, oh, he's the son of God. And my father's side is like, he was a really smart fish salesman. And you know what I mean? So this is, you know, and when it comes into step three and step four, this shit was like, you know, I was like, phew, I was all over the place on that. So I decided that I was going to prove everybody wrong. My family was on my back about my drinking. My job was on my back about my drinking. My wife drank just like me, so she didn't give a shit. but she wanted nothing to do with, you know, with me going to AA. You know, so, you know, I was ready. I was maybe ready to start stopping. She had wanted nothing to do with it. So I stayed sober for a year. But I stayed sober for a year on willpower, self-will, fear, all the things, to keep the job, keep the house, keep the business, all that stuff. I just stayed away from alcohol. You know, I didn't play golf. I was miserable. I didn't do anything. I went to meetings and I worked, and that was it. So year came up. I'd proved to myself I may not be an alcoholic. Page 24 in the big book, and I can't do it verbatim, but it talks about we are unable to remember the demoralization and the wreckage and everything of the past. So, and at that point, without something, I am powerless against the first drink. So, first time I played golf, beer girl came around, nice tits, I'll have a beer. You know what I mean? So, had the beer. Within 2 weeks, I got 2 bottles of vodka in my freezer again. My wife is so happy because I'm drinking again. You know what I mean? So, this goes on for about 4 months, City of Sanibel caught on real quick because I accelerated. They say you pick up where you left off. I jumped in and just, I really turned it on. I was never really into drugs, but they will come up a little bit in the story. City of Sanibel called me down again during my work hours. Here I am. I'm running an age group swim program, K through 12, coaching a high school team on the side, teaching fifth grade. I got a bottle of vodka locked in the desk in the elementary school. I'm entrusted with all these children and stuff, and I blow numbers again. So this time, there was no EAP. It was, you can keep your benefits and retire as of now or be fired. So I retired. You know what I mean? So workman's deferred compensation is something you save up. It was offered by them. A portion of my paycheck would go into savings. It's separate from the 401k that they match. But being the good Jew side of me, I was packing away a lot of money during that 12 years. And so I had about $62,000 in deferred compensation. And I'm like, wow, you know, here I go, I'm off. I decided to leave my wife at that time. Rented a place on the island, and for 2 years, I was in a blackout. When I did my fourth and fifth step, I truly have almost no recall of that too. And it could have even been 5 years. I don't know. There's a wash time in my life where I was just drinking and drinking and drinking. I would go to the airport and just fly places in blackouts. I know I saw a Monday night football game in San Francisco, only because I found the ticket stubs and my American Express bill. You know, when I was done with that 2 years, at this time, Beanie Babies, which were a craze, we were the only store, we had a retail store, we were the only store on the island that carried Beanie Babies. We made money hand over foot on this little friggin' thing that grandmothers would line up and pay like $200 on a $2.50 item. So we sold the business. I didn't file for the divorce, but I filled out the non-contest. You keep the house, you keep the vet. You know, I gotta just get out of here. I gotta find some way to get sober. So at this time, my family stepped in and they lined me up the Salvation Army here in Tampa, Florida. So I'm into the Salvation Army in 2003. It's a 6-month program. I did 13 months. They put me to work in the kitchen. The Vietnamese chef or food service manager at the time was this little woman from the outside, loved me, taught me everything she knew about culinary. Right as I was getting ready to leave, she had a stroke. They offered me the job. So I worked for the Salvation Army for another year. But at this time, you know, I got it made again. I'm back on top, bought a condo by USF, working for the Salvation Army. Still don't have a sponsor, still have not done the 12 steps, still don't have any firm bedrock in the spiritual part of this program. I'm running my own show, flat out, running my own show. Condo's across from a bowling alley, and they have ladies' night. And I went over to that ladies' night once, and I said, you know, I'm going to have one drink. So I had a Long Island iced tea, and and I was good. And so I went home, and I was very proud of myself. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic. That dreaded thought that came into my mind. Maybe I got it this time. I understand it. I got self-knowledge. I got all this. I know AA inside and out. I've read the big book 7 times, you know. Once again, 2 weeks later, 2 bottles of vodka in the freezer. Salvation Army does not take kindly to any smell of alcohol when you arrive for work. 4:30 in the morning, they tested me. And there's no EAP with the Salvation Army. There's no HR. It was, you're drunk, goodbye. That's it, end of story. So that's, you know, and like you were saying, you know, you'd think that that would be a bottom that would let me know and convince me and let me admit and accept to myself that I am an alcoholic. So, and in the meantime, I'm going to the old school group in Lutz because that's where the Salvation Army would send us. And I've known Glenn for a number of years. And that is still officially my home group, although my practicing group is the 301 house in Thanona, Tasasa, because I live in Sefner. And the old school group is just way too much of a commute to try to get to. So I go where I can get to because I'm active. So on and on. Rented my condo, went into a halfway house for a year. Little place called New Beginnings in Tampa. I don't know if anybody's heard of it. It is a shithole. It was. There was rats. There was roaches. You're fed by Metropolitan Ministries. I ate more rice that year than I'd eaten in my entire life. But I am today ever grateful for that year because that year taught me humility. That year taught me. You know, I worked second shift at the Waffle House, flipping eggs, and it was in the hood, so there was drug dealers, drunks, everybody coming in, and I got to see it on a daily basis. And that year was the awakening year. So, I decided that it'd be a really good idea if I got a sponsor. You know, asking for help was never in the vocabulary. All those years, never asked for help. I would ask for financial advice, I would, you know, ask for anything, but asking for help, for personal help from another man, I got to get close to another man, no, you know, but I did it. This guy had been coming into the Salvation Army running a speaker meeting for a long time. This man took me through the steps. We worked every Saturday for about 9 months, and I did the steps thoroughly. I wish I could say I was done with alcohol on that. But that was the doneness. And I put 2.5 years together and met a girl at a Hess station. And, you know, it was all timing. It was Sunday morning. She looked like a Bloody Mary would look good in her hand, and that was it. Well, little did I know this woman had an endless script of oxys. And I didn't even know what an oxy was, but I'm game. So we played house for about 2 weeks, and God, and, you know, and it's amazing how much money you can spend in 2 weeks if you're just reckless, you know what I mean? But at the end of that 2 weeks, I ran over the neighbor's mailbox at where she was living, and the neighbors called the police, and the police came to the house that we were staying at. It was our grandparents' home, and they were in Europe. And she was a New Yorker, and she teed off on the cops because we were both just wasted. I mean, I could not even put my pants on. I was in my underwear, and I could not negotiate my pants. That's how bad I was. So they figured the safest bet was to take somebody to jail. So since I was the passive, you know what I mean, it'd be a lot easier to take me to jail than to take her. They took me to jail. So that weekend in the jail was my first time in jail since the adolescent bullshit. And when I came out, it was right about time where the person that was leasing my condo was moving out, and I went back to the condo, and I moved in, and I went to UCH Hospital, which was, it's, I don't know what it's called now, but it was University Community Hospital at that time. And I went in and I said, can you guys detox me? I have seizures when I detox. And they knew me because I had been there like 4 times. You know what I mean? That's, you know, I did St. Joe's. I did, you know, I did detoxes all over the place. I don't really know how many. But they knew me, and they knew that I didn't pay my bill. And so they strapped me. They put me in one of the assless gowns and strapped me to a gurney and left me in the hallway for about what seemed like hours. And I'm lying in the gurney, and I'm feeling the seizures, or I'm feeling the pre-seizure coming on, because my body just starts to shake and rock. I mean, I can feel it now when I think it. It's an incredible, fearful poison of the body. I don't know how else to explain it. But at that time, I finally said, God, whatever you are, either let me get this AA shit or take me out now. I left that hospital a day later. They kept me overnight, and they gave me the Gatorade bag and all that stuff to get my nutrients and potassium and all that stuff back up. And the obsession to drink alcohol had left me. That was the springboard to my recovery. I'd been working at this time for a company called Sodexo. I fessed up to them because I had kind of disappeared from work. They gave me a second chance, and I got involved in AA. I got a commitment to AA. I cleaned the bathrooms at the old school group for about a year and a half, and I wasn't allowed to tell anybody that I was cleaning the bathrooms at the old school group. That was the best thing for me, because I would get pissed off because the women are slobs, and you know what I mean? Just, you know, I went through resentment, you know what I mean? I wanted notoriety. I mean, just all the things I learned from that commitment were absolutely key. Moved to Sefner, Florida, took a job. I'm one of two chefs at a high-end rehab in Riverview, Florida. The commitment that I have kept now for almost 5 years is a Joe and Charlie big book study Monday nights at the 301 house. And what they do is I have it on my laptop, and we listen for about 20 minutes, and then we discuss that or if someone is having a problem in the thing. On the fence, You know, I was on the fence for 7-8 years. And on the fence is the most uncomfortable place to be for me in recovery. I either needed to be in AA or just go, you know what I mean? I left out on Sanibel Island. There's a preserve out there called Ding Darling. And after the year of sobriety and then the relapse and then the job thing, I took my dog, a 5-pound bag of dog food, and one of my rifles out into the preserve, and a bottle of vodka, and I sat. I took the dog food because I figured it might be a few days before they found the body, and I didn't want my dog to eat me, so I figured it would eat the dog food. That was my thinking. That's how whacked I was. Put the gun in my mouth, and I don't know if this was a spiritual experience, a moment of clarity, or what it was, but something told me this was not the answer. So I threw the gun as far as I could into the swampland and finished the vodka and paid dearly for the red ant bites because I passed out. There were so many different pieces to my puzzle, and what I have found now with working with other people, I swore that I would never sponsor more than one guy at a time, and I stuck with that for a couple of years. I would get one person because my work schedule is pretty strong, and I would take him through the 12 steps, and when I felt that he was comfortable enough, I would take somebody else on if they were ready. And now, all of a sudden, I got four guys. But it's really cool because I've got this guy, and I learned so much about myself and about my program by taking another man through the 12 steps. I got one guy who could build a nuclear reactor in his kitchen. He is the smartest man that I have ever met. He got a pharmacy degree and then realized that he had a felony that wouldn't let him be a pharmacist, so he flipped around and got an engineering degree in like 2 years. I mean, this guy is freaking brilliant. But he's smarter than the spirituality aspect of the program. That's the challenge I have with him now. So I'm trying to teach this man to get in touch with the spiritual side of this program. And so, hence, it's making me branch out into other areas. I go to, when I have time, there is a Buddhist thing called Spirit of Mindfulness. It's on Nebraska Avenue down in the Sly area. They have a Sunday meditation. And it's really cool. They have you sit for 15 minutes and meditate, and then you do a walking meditation where you guys you zigzag through the chairs. And my sponsor, the sponsor that took me through the steps, he's a salesperson, he screwed me over on a car, so that's a whole nother story, I won't get into that. So, I mean, hey, even though sponsors are sponsors, they're human, you know what I mean? So I got this other sponsor from the old school group, and he's the one that suggested this to me. And so I go into this meditation, and I am, like, scared, closed-minded, the whole works. But I did it for, 6 months straight. I did it every Sunday. And it's a different perspective of our program. It's exactly, they talk about, one of the main focuses with them is that if I do not live in gratitude, I am choosing to suffer. You know, it is my decision whether I am happy in my situations or not. My situations, you know, and it goes along with life is 5% what happens and 95% how you handle it. But if I do not stay in ultimate gratitude, then I'm choosing to be miserable. And that's it. And they show you the meditations. It's hard to explain. I would just suggest if you have Sundays off and you want to try it once, it's pretty cool. It's free. They don't pass a basket or anything. They have a thing at the door. You can put something in if you want on the way in or out. It opened because meditation was like, you know, I don't know how to meditate. And I'm coming back to the other guys I'm working with. Bear with me for a minute. What I found in meditation is swimming. growing up swimming, growing up competitive swimming, and then growing up coaching swimming and all that stuff, I have found swimming to be my ultimate meditation. I got to be moving, and underwater cuts me off from the rest of the world. I can really, really get into the prayer aspect of this program when I'm underwater. So I try and swim a mile or two, three or four times a week. And it just, that saves my ass, because life just keeps on coming. You know, work is work. Relationships, you know, I sucked at relationships. I had my only true good relationship was with booze, because I knew exactly what I was getting from booze. I knew where to get it. I knew exactly where it would take me. And that's it. That's the only relationship I had for 25 years. So, I mean, there was human contact, and there was drunken shit and all that stuff, but I never had true relationships. Which leads me to this other sponsor. He's been sober for 2 years. And his marriage is just falling apart. He married a woman in the program, which, you know, I really don't have any opinion either way on that, whether you meet somebody in the rooms and you marry them or not, you know what I mean? It's kind of crazy. But I tell him before we sit down every time, I tell him, I'm like, you know, you're coming to me for, we're going through the steps, and because we're trying to help your relationship. And I tell him that I suck at relationships. Why are you coming to me with this stuff? You know what I mean? But for some reason, what we're doing is helping him, and it must be helping me. Sponsee number three, cracking prostitutes. just... This guy he's probably pushing 60. This is just how I'm referring to him. He's got a really great religious background, and he loves religion, he loves church and stuff like that, but he's illiterate. You know what I mean? That has been his handicap all along. So what I get to do with him is I take him through the book, and every 7 or 8 words, we make sure that we're clear on the definition of the word. And it's tedious, and when I'm tired sometimes I don't feel like doing it. But the benefit that he gets from this, he's back on track a little bit. You never know with this guy. I mean, crack, I never tried crack, thank God. You know, because if I had done crack, who knows? You know, cocaine, dabbled with it, but I'm Jewish, I'm too cheap. alcohol, you can just buy a ton and it lasts a lot longer, you know what I mean? So, and then I'm gonna go into my last sponsee, and then I'm just gonna finish up on one thing. 10 minutes left? Cool. All right. My other sponsee is, he just came back. He's probably back at 4 months or so, and heroin is his main. I mean, alcohol is his base, but heroin is his baby. And he tried NA for a long, long time, and he found it to be too dark and too morbid, so he decided to give AA a shot. And he asked me to take him through the steps. Now, the lesson that I have learned from him, and especially from his relapse, is a drug is a drug is a drug. Heroin, from my understanding, it's a different escape. But I have also found that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous can treat just about any addiction, anything, really. You know, they talk about having a simple kit of spiritual tools. And I did not know that first meeting on Sanibel Island was going to change my life in such a way that it has changed my life because of the 12 steps. I'll just run through them real quick and give you my take on what I did after the sponsor and what I did before the sponsor. Step one, admitted that I was an alcoholic. My life was unmanageable. I knew my life was unmanageable. Too much shame, I think. I'm not sure. Too much ego to admit to the failure of being an alcoholic. You know, the family was keeping it quiet, even though my father was one. Even though my uncle, I stepped over him when I was 13 years old. He was a fireman. He used to work 7 days on, 7 days off. One of the 7 days, he went in his room with a couple bottles of Jack Daniels. He never came out. You know, alcohol ran through the family like crazy. You know, it's just, they say it's a family disease. Not just for that reason, because it just, the effects it has on the family is just absolutely amazing. It reaches everybody. My godmother, who had probably no contact with me for 15 years of my drinking, but yet she would hear the things and she would pray. And she would send me a Christmas card with $5 and a prayer. You know what I mean? My whole family was so affected by this disease. So, you know, step one, I think that in the hospital that day when I asked God for help is when I finally solidified the fact that I am an alcoholic and I can never touch alcohol safely again. What a great relief that has been. Steps two and step three. Now, you know, one, two, and three are basically between me and me and a God or something of my understanding. They are not action steps at all. They are decisions. Step two, when I finally got rid of all of my childhood education, you know, I had read the Bible my junior year of high school and done reports on it. There is one quote from the Bible. It's in Psalms or Proverbs, and I'm probably going to paraphrase a little bit because I did not memorize the Bible. But it says, "Never let my circumstances cloud my source of power." And I love that statement because my sources of power now are the fellowship, the prayer, the service, and the steps. You know, no matter what's going on in my life, if I stay connected to all those four things, I can get through anything. Without, you know, and I'm blessed now. I don't really have the thought of a drink anymore. But, you know, as it was said before, I had to hit every bottom that I had to hit. And I think the spiritual bottom, the last one that I hit, was the one that I had to hit. Because I'd lost the job. 3 years into my sobriety, I get a knock on my door, and it's a summons, I forget what they call that person. But anyway, I've been notified that my wife had died. She never filed for divorce. So I take a week off work, and I drive down to Sanibel, and her intestines had exploded. And she was in the house for like 4 days before the neighbors even found her. You know what I mean? And that is alcoholism. You know what I mean? She could not. And my neighbors told me of the last couple of years of her demeanor and her state. And I just prayed and I learned. So, but on a positive point on that one, her daughter from her previous marriage was suing me for the estate because I still owned the house all of a sudden, which I had no idea. I thought I had walked away from that. And real estate on Sanibel Island is not cheap. Thank God for somebody in the old school group who was a probate attorney. I went to him and I said, "Mark," I got to do a call out because he was doing call outs. I said, "Mark, can you help me with this? What do I do? I walked away from this situation. Do I be an asshole and just take it all, or do I give it all to her or something like that?" So, came up with I took 35% of the house because I had invested a lot of money and time into it, and we thought that was a fair thing, which turned out to be a blessing. All the money that I got from that real estate helped me with steps 8 and 9 because I left out. I was in Tampa General on the flight deck for a week. and that was, I think, $14,000. I was able to clear up all of my financial wreckage from that, you know, and it's terrible. And I'm selfish that it's terrible that she died, but the way it worked out was just laid out perfectly for my benefit, for me to go on and help other people. It's crazy how the world works. What else is it like now? It's busy. I thought I'd be, you know, my life is boring, but it's not boring. It's just, there's no chaos. You know what I mean? It's my work is stable. I was in a relationship for 5 years with a normie, and wonderful woman, because, you know, I found that I was, you know, I'm going through midlife and adolescence at the same time, and somehow she negotiated me through growing up, you know, because I'm growing up in public, basically. I'm growing up in the rooms. I'm growing up on a daily basis, because I skipped all of the stuff that people that don't have this disease do, you know, losing their virginity, graduating college, things like that, all the things that people do on the normal tread of life. I drank through all of that. So, and all the relationships and all of the things. So she taught me about love. And that's been one of the gifts of recovery, because I never understood love. I never understood the love of my sisters. The relationship I have with my sisters now is just friggin' phenomenal. I'm going to Boston with my sister in 2 weeks for a week. You know, and she was the one that changed all the locks on her house, changed the alarm code on my mother's place. You know what I mean? She was the tough love. And the love that comes back just by removing alcohol from the equation and then taking the course of action, which is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and getting involved with you people who I was scared to death of for 5 or 6 years. Sober, first sober stock I went to, I got hammered. Don't want to be around a large group of sober people. Roundup. Get a hotel room at the Roundup, and I'm freaking partying in my room. You know, this is before I got a handle on this thing. You know what I mean? It's crazy how scared I was to be around sober people, because I didn't know me. The benefits of helping people and not asking anything in return was introduced to me early on by cleaning those restrooms. And that is something that I really have to continue to do. I've got a girl from the 301 house right now. The girl that I was involved with moved to North Dakota to take care of some family business. And it was wonderful for me to be able to let her go and not make it about me, about my feelings, about my wants, about my needs. She's got three daughters in the Sefner area. Two of them are crack whores. They were sucking her dry. She had no happiness, and I had no answer. And I was able to just let her go with support and love to go and do and to grow and to be happy. And the one daughter that is really, really good and married and lives out in Zephyr Hills is having a daughter, and Dawn is actually back in town right now. I may or I may not see her. You know, that's up to God. So, but it's just the things I have learned that I should have known all along, and I might have been told when I was young, have just come into such light in sobriety. To experience life as life is. To not be afraid to take chances. To not be afraid to love. To not be afraid to try new stuff. You know what I mean? I jumped out of an airplane drunk, but I did it sober. You know, just little stuff like that. The little benefits I get from being involved in Alcoholics Anonymous and hanging out with you people. Because you people keep me on track. I don't know. I know a couple of you. But I know you all. You know, the relationship that I have with any given person in this room is tighter than any relationship I can have with any of my family members. just because I get it. You have been in that dark place. You have been in, I'll call it, you know, the last, before I got kicked off of Sanibel, he got kicked out of Hawaii. I got kicked off Sanibel. That was pretty good. At that point, I was buying enough vodka for the week. And I know you guys are young, so you might not know what the hell TV land is. But, you know, I would sit in my house and I would watch Green Acres. And whatever else came on, you know what I mean? And it was dark. I was renting the underneath of a house up on stilts. And it was dark and it was lonely. The only contact I had was with the grocery store to maybe get a couple of things. I was eating maybe every 3 days. And the guys at the liquor stores. There's three liquor stores on Sanibel Captiva, and I would alternate them because I did not want them to know that I had a drinking problem. They didn't care. You know what I mean? It's just the crazy insanity that I drank myself into, or the state of hopelessness, or the seemingly state of hopelessness of mind and body that they talk about, which, one more thing, you know, that saved my ass. I could understand what I had. Because for so long, I didn't know what I had. And when they explained it to me in those simple terms of an allergy, I could accept that. That was part of my acceptance. So I will end with, if you're on the fence, please get off it. Get a sponsor. Get involved in the steps. And I've got a guy that I work with is an NA. And he talks to his sponsees in the office every morning. And the last thing he says to them is, live in the steps or die, motherfucker, and he hangs up. So I'll leave you with that.